Hello and welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson. Joining me shortly will be Tim Phillips, and Tim will join us for this week's review. Before that, though, we're going to review the Oscar show and who all won. Did anyone else out there watch the Oscars? It seemed like it was going pretty good until almost literally the very end. But we're going to get into all that in a second. It is, you know what? I kind of liked the show. I thought it was a fun show. I mean, I'm not as harsh on the Oscars as other people. It is what it is. It is what it is. Anyway, it just, you know, are our expectations for the Oscars so high? Because no matter what they do, no matter what changes they bring to the show, people hate it. They just hate it. Hating the Oscars is a professional thing. It's wonder why any of us watch. Anyway, we're going to get to that in a second. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here on CFRU every Wednesday at 3 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the news movies, which this week will be the new Buddy Road movie meets prank show Bad Trip, which you can now stream on the Netflix. It's a good anecdote, or a good antidote, I should say, to this week's ultra seriousness with the Oscars and everything, although they are connected because one of the stars of Bad Trip was involved in one of the gags on Oscar night, and I'll get to that because there's really not too much to say about most of the winners. It more or less played out exactly how I expected, although Daniel Kaluuya getting Best Supporting Actor for Judas and the Black Messiah, I was happy to see that. I was very happy to see that. there's this whole thing because Lakeith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya are the two stars of Judas and the Black Messiah, but they were both nominated for Supporting Actor. And it's weird because one of them is clearly the star, and the other one is clearly a supporting actor. I think the way it works out is Lakeith Stanfield is the star. He is the Judas. He's the first one in the title. The Black Messiah, Daniel Kaluuya as Fred Hampton, is ultimately a supporting character. It is meant to be Bill O'Neill's story, the Lakeith Stanfield character. Now, the way everybody thought this was going to go, and apparently the people putting on the Oscar show themselves, was that Chadwick Boseman was going to get the posthumous trophy for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom for being the lead role, which is why you want to get Kaluuya or Stanfield out of the way. But that's not what happened. The awards play out as expected. Chloe Zhao wins for Best Director for Nomadland. Excellent. Second woman ever to get that prize. First woman of color to ever get that prize. Great call. And then we come to the 11 o'clock hour. Now, the show was supposed to end at 11, but, you know, the Oscars never end on time. We get to 11 o'clock, and we get to the award of Best Picture. And you're like, okay, what did they give out the Best Actor and Best Actress trophies? I don't remember that. And I did. IMDb does a thing where they update the winners as the awards are handed out. So you can always scroll down and see which awards are left to be given out. So I did. And it's like, no, Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actor, Best Actress were still left to be given out. I was like, okay, this is weird. And I thought, there must be a reason why they're doing it this way. So they give out Best Picture, Nomadland. Excellent. And then, so that leaves Best Actress and Best Actor. They first give out Best Actress, and the way I thought they were setting this up was that they were going to give out Best Actress. It was going to go to probably Viola Davis or Andra Day. They would get the applause and get the speech, and then they get into Best Actor. And I think a lot of people thought this is how it was going to play out. They get Best Actor, the final award of the night goes to Chadwick Boseman. It's a way to, like, finish off the night, put an exclamation point on it, honoring this great actor who died too soon. But that's not what happened. Best Actress goes to Frances McDormand. Again, she's like the seventh person to win three Oscars. Now, that's pretty incredible. And I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it. But I recall a couple of weeks ago when I was doing the predictions, I was saying that if I were to make a rank the nominees, she would probably be the fifth, because she's already gotten to, again, she's a great actress. She'll probably be nominated again at some point. But, you know, when you have Viola Davis history-making as first black woman to get 4 nominations for acting, Vanessa Kirby, her first big nomination, Carey Mulligan, I don't know if she's ever been nominated for an Oscar before. I don't think she has, but I don't want to put money on that. But she had this, like, incredible turn in Promising Young Woman. And then you have Andra Day. It's, like, her first big movie, her first starring role, knocks it out of the park. It seemed like it was okay to not give Frances McDormand the Oscar this year. But again, that is not what happened. So she wins, and you could tell she wasn't exactly prepared for this, but she gave a nice sort of impromptu speech just the same. Then we get to Best Actor, and they do the nominees, and it turns out the winner is not Chadwick Boseman, not Riz Ahmed, who I think people would have accepted as a strong second pick, but it's Anthony Hopkins. Again, he is the oldest Oscar winner ever. Good for him. But, I'm sorry. It just, you know, this really seemed like the chance to give it to Chadwick. I mean, Chadwick Boseman's never going to be up for another Oscar, I'm sorry to say. And it just ended the night so anticlimactically, because it seemed like they were building up to giving Chadwick Boseman this prize. But it goes to Anthony Hopkins. He's not there. Because the way they had it set, they did the show in the Union Station in LA. So they had a small crowd there of nominees. They had different satellite places where the nominees were tuning in from the show. And France was one place. Some sort of theater in London was another place, because that's where Gary Oldman was, and that's where some of the other nominees were. But no Anthony Hopkins. So the night ends anticlimactically with Anthony Hopkins, sort of like the least likely option, winning. leaving Joaquin Phoenix holding the bag, because he's not a great guy, but he's fine. But he's not a great, like, presenter. He's not like a comedian. Like, he can't, like, let the joke roll off. And this is where having a host or not having a host really could have made the difference, because they could have thrown it to the host at the end and just, you know, have something to take the the bizarreness and the edge off that left that moment, because it was like, I don't know what the opposite of a mic drop is, but it was like the opposite of a mic drop, where it felt like something should have fell and it didn't. But, you know, Joaquin Phoenix did the best he could. I mean, but aside from that, like I said, I thought it was a pretty solid show. I loved the beginning where Regina King is, like, walking in to the station, you know, with the Steadicam following her, and she just looks so fierce, and the soundtrack is so great, because it felt like the opening of a Steven Soderbergh movie, which makes sense, because Steven Soderbergh was one of the producers of the show this year. But, you know, there were so many great, at least I thought there were so many, it felt more laid back, it felt a bit more casual, although everyone was still dressed to the nines, it felt a bit more personable, it felt a bit more fun, like, everything was fine until we get to the end of the show, where they're clearly running overtime, and they still do this music trivia segment with Lil Rel Howery, and Questlove, who was doing, who was the DJ. They didn't have an orchestra, which is one of the things the Oscars usually have. They had a DJ, and Questlove was the DJ, and he did a very fine job. No complaints about Questlove, but they did this whole musical trivia segment that should have been flushed when they realized they were going to be 20 minutes overtime, but they did it anyway. Ground the thing to a halt. Then they roll out Best Picture out of order, and theoretically, because it looked like they were going to do the Chadwick Boseman thing, and then they didn't do it. Anthony Hopkins wins. Anthony Hopkins isn't there. And that's how you royally screw up the Oscars at the very end of the show. But having said that, I think it was a very, I think it was a good show. I think a lot of really great winners. You know, Sound of Metal got a lot of love. Mank got a couple of technical awards, which was, I think is all it was really worthy of receiving. My Octopus Teacher won Best Documentary Film. Soul won Best Animated Film. Emerald Fennell won Best Screenplay for Promising Young Woman. Yoon Young Jun for Minari is Best Supporting Actress. She gave a great speech. Honoring Brad Pitt while she was at it. Brad Pitt clearly had some fun helping her out. So, you know, by and large, pretty good show. Could have been better. Anyway, before wrapping up the award season, I do want to talk about the Independent Spirit Awards, which were handed out last Thursday. Presaging the Oscars, Nomadland was the best feature there, and Chloe Zhao, Best Director. Sound of Metal did get Best First Feature, which was great. Great for... oh, shoot, who directed Sound of Metal? I'm just going to look that up really quick. But Darius Marder. So that was great for him because Sound of Metal was a really awesome movie, really well made. Emerald Fennell also won Best Screenplay here. And interestingly, Carey Mulligan won Best Actress. Andra Day wasn't nominated, although Frances McDormand was and Viola Davis was. But I thought that was she deserved it. Riz Ahmed won Best Actor. Yoon Young Jun for Minari won Best Supporting Actress. Paul Racy, I was super happy to see this. He won Best Supporting Male. They changed this up a bit. I just want to point out again, Independent Spirit Awards were the only award show to show First Cow love. First Cow did not win, but they did. First Cow was at least nominated. Andy Sayara was nominated for Best First Screenplay for Palm Springs, which was a film we loved on the show. The Robert Altman Award, I guess it's for like a whole crew. The winner there was One Night in Miami. Very well deserved, I think, as well. So, you know, moving down to the dregs. No, let's not get that bad. But the Razzies were given out on Saturday. The Razzies, I mean, at the best of times, they're a great way to dunk on some bad movies. At the worst of times, and I think this year was like one of the worst of times, because the winner for Worst Picture was Absolute Proof, which was this stupid documentary that MyPillow guy Mike Lindell put out, that essentially him trying to prove that Donald Trump won the 2020 presidential election. We all know it's full of, well, you know what. Mike Lindell also won Worst Actor. Again, this is dunking on people who is like so easy to dunk on. It's almost not worth the effort, the time, effort, energy, and trouble. I mean, he was up against Adam Sandler, and this is another one of these things. It's like Adam Sandler every year. No matter how obscure the movie is, like Hubie Halloween or Hubby Halloween. I think it's Hubie, because if it's Hubby, it should be a double B. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's so easy. Along with the MyPillow guys movie music, the Sia song, the Sia movie, got three awards, including Worst Director for Sia, Worst Actress for Kate Hudson, and Worst Actress for Maddie Ziegler for Worst Supporting Actress for Maddie Ziegler. Rudy Giuliani got two. Again, this is like dunking on, like, it's, do you think Rudy Giuliani's going to be saying, like, hey, you better send me those awards, you know, that I won, because I don't think Rudy Giuliani has a sense of humor about himself. So I highly doubt he's going to know and or care about whether or not he won a Razzie. It's also funny, it's like the rest of these movies under the worst supporting actor category, Chevy Chase in The Very Excellent Mr. Dundee, I haven't heard of it. Shia LaBeouf in The Tax Collector, I haven't heard of it. Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Iron Mask, haven't heard of it. Bruce Willis in Breach, Hard Kill, and Survive the Night, I haven't heard of a single one of those. worst screenplay, I'm glad, quote unquote glad, that they squeezed 365 Days, which is this like Polish softcore movie that got some kind of wide release, and somehow it ended up on the Razzie's radar. I don't know. It won worst screenplay. And Doolittle won worst remake, ripoff, or sequel. And again, I mean, that's a pretty easy pick. I think it's pretty well renowned that Doolittle was one of the worst movies to come out last year. Anyway, I mean, I think at the end of the day, a lot of people were talking about how the Academy didn't have much to choose from. I disagree entirely. I think the Razzies didn't have too much to choose from, because some of the usual suspects they would have dunked on, like a lot of the big screen, big dumb action-y blockbuster things, were pushed back or paused or delayed, and that just, you know, wasn't a thing that that happened this year, unfortunately. So that was kind of, I confess the Razzie Awards were kind of pointless this year. The Academy Awards, again, I was fine with the award show. I appreciated the attempt to do something different. I just wish that in the end, they had given Chadwick Boseman the freaking Oscar like he freaking deserved. Or better yet, go back in time and give the Five Bloods some Oscar love. Because it seems really, really bizarre to me that, I mean, that's something else we'll have to keep an eye on in the future is, you know, Netflix had all this great stuff, but through their advertising efforts behind the trial of the Chicago 7 and Mank, instead of putting it where it belonged with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and Da Five Bloods. But I digress. Coming up next, we have a review about a girl named Maria, and to cue us up, here is a song about a girl named Maria. Unrelated, but a lot of love for the Marias out there. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
I'm stuck. Can you help me get out? Please, I'm stuck under here. Oh, God. Oh, thank you.
Oh, hey. Shh. Oh, man.
You see any guards out here or anything?
Better take your ass off. You better take off. You better run.
Man, I'm gonna get my car and I'm gonna go to Mexico and I'm gonna just start all over, man.
Get those clothes off and get the fuck out of here.
Can I borrow your vest?
I can't give you my vest.
You my lookout. I never forget a face.
Go.
Thank you for helping me escape.
Hey, we had a convict escape. Did you see anyone?
Where?
Where? They were here somewhere. Did you see anybody?
No. I said, someone escaped?
And you haven't helped her at all?
No, how am I going to help her?
And that was a clip from Bad Trip. It's the new film from Kateo Sakurai, and it stars Eric Andre, Little Rel Howery, Tiffany Haddish, Michael Conlon, and a cast of hundreds of innocent bystanders. I'm now being joined on the line by Tim Phillips. Tim, how are you today?
Doing well, Adam. It was good to watch a nice comedy for this show. Needed a good laugh after everything that's happening, and yeah, it was good. I actually watched it twice. I needed extra laughs. It's 80 minutes, so I thought I could watch it twice in 2 days, so I did.
Yeah, you can watch it twice, and it's still shorter than Zack Snyder's Justice League, and you can still feel pretty good about it, so.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
How are you doing, Adam?
Oh, well, I can't complain either, but yeah, to your point, it was nice to have just like this crazy comedy, just completely balls to the wall. Because like the last stretch, like last week we did Jasper Mall, which was fun and in an interesting but sad kind of way. And then the week before that we had Nomadland, and then the week before that we had U.S. versus Billie Holiday, and then before that, the aforementioned Zack Snyder's Justice League, and I can't remember what we did the week before that, but it was probably also a sad movie of some kind. But yeah, it was just nice to laugh and laugh thoroughly and consistently, which may be a sign of where this review is going. So, Tim, why don't you start us off with what attracted you to going on a bad trip?
Well, I saw I saw pictures on Netflix and the trailer with Eric Andre, and he always brings me in. I don't watch his show, so I must admit that, but I watched one of his stand-up routines just basically from the picture and his expression on Netflix, and that drew me in for this too. He's just such a naturally funny guy, and I thought, yeah, it'd be good to watch a nice comedy this time. There were a couple other more serious ones I was looking at, and I thought, no, this is recent. This looks like a fun time. Let's watch this one. And yeah, like you said, it didn't disappoint. It is a good trip, not a bad trip, but that's what I get. But it's really funny. Like it's got a really sort of borrowed premise. It comes across like Dumb and Dumber meets Jackass, but it's so much better because I just think Eric Andre just commits so much, and he's just such a funny guy. And then you've got his partner in crime there, Lil Rel Howery, who I know best from Get Out. I know he's done TV and stuff. He was the buddy in Get Out too, and he's great being the straight man. And then Tiffany Haddish was just incredible. She's just so hilarious and committed to being a bad bitch, basically, to being that. And she has a car that says that. She's, you know, breaking out of prison.
Yeah, we're not disparaging her. She advertises herself literally from the first scene as a bad bitch. So.
Yeah. No offense to anyone, but she's just, I think, like, in my perfect world, she'd probably be nominated for awards for this. She's just so good. And it's awesome seeing that combination of like a prank comedy, but with a plot through line. I know some other films have done that too, but I really like this because it's a really sweet plot through line where Eric Andre, very much like Dumb and Dumber, he actually sees this girl from high school who's his crush from high school, and he wants to follow her to New York. She meets him in the smoothie shop and says, just in passing, oh, I've got an art gallery in New York.
She's being nice.
Yeah. And he's down in Florida, and he takes that as an invitation. So him and his buddy steal the car from Tiffany Haddish, the bad bitch car, while she's in prison.
Pink and go on this bad bitch car.
Yeah, pink bad bitch car, and go on this road trip. And it's just hilarious because it's got that combination where, you know, from other movies like Borat, Jackass, where there's real people involved too in the scenes. And it's just so funny. And what they've left in the movie, I'm sure there's probably hours of footage, but they have some really great bits with real people who are like interacting in the plot, really, and giving advice and, you know, trying to help. And I think there's kind of a sweetness to it. It's like, you know, they go to a country and western bar, and, you know, you've seen Borat do that before, and it could be just sort of, you know, just showing, you know, the inherent racism and stuff like that. But they don't go there that much. It's more like just shocking people and just being like outsiders in that bar, and mm-hmm. and how will they react when they do something really outrageous and really dangerous. And it's very interesting. It's a very interesting movie, and very innovative in a way too, you know, just using that plot, which is your basic sort of cliche plot, but just having these mm-hmm. moments of real interaction. And you can see definitely it's pre-COVID, because mm-hmm. now it's tough to, you know, get in people's face and and do that kind of thing. But I just thought it was hilarious. And I liked, like I said, I like that it's a story, and it doesn't have that like mockumentary thing, which often you get in a, like a prank comedy. Okay, you know, I'm a journalist, you know, they've been great, like Borat was awesome, but like this is just, you know, just there's that momentum of the plot and just some wild scenes, like you were saying, throughout. Mm-hmm. Like there's a scene where they accidentally take drugs, which is hilarious. they're wild, and they go to the zoo and they have an interaction with this gorilla, which mm-hmm. is just off the wall.
Yeah.
And then there's even sweet scenes where Eric Andre talks to this old man on a bench to get advice on, like, what should I do? Should I go see Maria in New York? I don't have anything going on here in Florida. And he goes, go, follow your heart. And then it turns into a musical song and dance number that you know, where he's dancing in the mall, and it's just, nobody knows what's going on. And it's just hilarious. I just really like the movie.
Yeah, no, it is definitely pre-COVID times, because I think this was supposed to premiere last year at South by Southwest, which was famously canceled at almost literally the last minute. There's so much to unpack there. I think part of it is, Eric Andre and Lil Rel Howard make a great team. I actually went into this, I turned it on having no idea what it was about or what to expect. So I turn it on, and it's this kind of like there's this like cinema verite kind of quality, the way they were getting the scene and shooting the scene. And then there's the opening gag where he, Eric Andre, accidentally vacuums his coveralls off, and he's in his birthday suit underneath. And it's like, wait, is this a prank movie? Are they doing like sketches? And then it goes to Lil Rel Howard's place of business, and Tiffany Haddish comes in and robs the place. And all these people like who are in there like seem stunned. Like people who come in to get their phones fixed, they seem stunned. Like I'm like, what is going on? And it took me a minute to get to what this is, to what all this was about, and what kind of movie I was watching. But you know, once I kind of figured all that out, I it was really easy to go with it. And my sister came in a little while, like close to the end, and she's like, what is this? And I'm like, okay, these two guys are doing a movie nobody else knows.
Yeah, for sure. It reminds me, what was that Eddie Murphy one? Bowfinger. It's like both.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're just, you know, they're doing a movie nobody else knows. Yeah. And they're just so committed to their role and their character and, you know, what their motivation is, where they want to get to, which is, you know, especially for Eric Andre, to get to Maria in New York at all costs, you know, it doesn't matter what happens.
Before we get too far in it, I do want to say Maria, who's played by Michaela Conlon, she's not like a comedian or like or you know, at least she doesn't have like the background, same background as Eric Andre and Little Rel Howery and Tiffany Haddish. Like, she doesn't have that stand-up background. She's like an actress. Like, she was in Bones for years. Mm-hmm. I know because my mom watches Bones. So it just, you know, here's this random actress. But I mean, she's also called upon to like do some crazy stuff as well, and she is really invested in those scenes. Like, there's a fantasy sequence where her and Eric Andre, where Eric Andre is like imagining this relationship they're gonna have, and they're kind of out and about, and you know, and there's like these like stunts in the dream sequence as well, and she's like right in there. So I applaud everyone for being so thoroughly committed to the gags, because that is not easy. That is like, it is not easy to you know, pretend like you're throwing somebody off of a roof while everyone is down below. It's like, oh my God, don't do it. Don't drop him.
You have to be absolutely shameless to do that, right? Because that's in real life. This isn't like, you know, there's other actors and extras. These are people thinking you're about to throw somebody off a building, right? And like you were saying with the character Maria, it's like, yeah, she's good. She's really, really solid, and you know, as sort of like a straight woman, like, what is this guy? He's crazy. Why does he? I barely know this guy. Why does he want to date me? But also, like in the dream sequence, and there's another sequence later on, she shows anger really well. Like, she gets so angry, and she's freaking out people around her. It's just hilarious. She's like using physical force, just beating up like grown men and stuff.
Yeah. She's really good. Some of the gags didn't work. I mean, there are like some obvious gags, like the one where they go into the country western bar and I'm like, oh, projectile vomit is coming up. That's the writing's a little on the wall in some of those, but
and you wonder how people buy it though too, right? Because it looks so fake, and he's holding his hand away, but they're buying it, so it's almost like just the naivety of the people around him, I think, sells the scene there, that they're so like, oh my God, this guy's sick, and they're really buying it, you know?
Yeah, and the whole gorilla sequence too, I found a little difficult to believe that people believed what they were watching was real, because the gorilla looked so fake. And maybe that's because I've seen too many fake gorilla movies. But having said that, we were talking about this before we started recording, you know, there are people who will quite literally believe anything. And perhaps it's just very easy to believe that this guy got into a gorilla enclosure and stuff happened with that gorilla, and I guess that's the only way to accept. But one of the things I did enjoy was as the credits rolled, they did like some outtakes and things, and they showed that like for some of the gags, like the one at the beginning where the plumber comes in and Chris wakes up under in the bathtub, just like under a ton of beer cans, and shocks the plumber. That they did that a couple of different times with a couple of different plumbers, I guess, like fishing for the right reaction. And they did a similar thing at the auto detailing place where he vacuums off his work uniform. So, you know, it does a good job of sort of showing how the process worked. I mean, if you can call any of this a process, but it just showed, you know, some of this isn't always the first take, and it's not the first kind of person they bring in and to get a reaction, but
yeah, and they selected the one guy because he just said, I'm the plumber or something. They're like, Eric Andre jumps out of the bathtub he's covered with like beer cans underneath, you can't see him. So plumber comes in, he just jumps up, says, who are you? And he goes, I'm the plumber.
I'm the plumber. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know what kind of reaction you get, but I guess what, you know, what's the director's name? Kateo Sakuria, knew what he was fishing for, or had a vague idea of what he was fishing for. And when he saw it, he's like, okay, that's what I need. And
yeah,
there you go.
they had choices, obviously, and they went with them. And I thought something interesting too was Tiffany Haddish. What was her name? Trina, right?
Trina. Yep.
Yeah, character of Trina, the really badass character. She confronts some of the guys from the country and western bar, I think, yep. Or she confronts, yeah, because there's a picture and she. The whole she's claiming, oh, she found this on Facebook, this picture of you taking a selfie with those two guys, right?
Right.
Chris and Bud, or Eric Andre and Lil Rel Howery. She's like, yeah, I see you with where are these guys at? Where are these dudes at? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking. I don't know. It's like, where's my car? And she's just like in his face, and he like kind of pushes back a bit. It's like, I don't know where your car is, leave me alone. And then like you're saying, in the end credit sequence, it's pretty sweet at, because then he realizes, or they tell him, right, that she's an actress. And he's like, wow, great job, you really sold that. He's like giving her a hug and stuff, when it's so confrontational before that. And that's what I really liked about Tiffany Haddish too, is in like her scenes, she's either just like really angry in your face, or she's got this charm, she's got this sweet smile about her, right? Like I think she's really great comedic actress from watching this, like when she escapes there's this whole thing where they've got the busload of convicts and they're taking them to prison, and she's hiding underneath the truck, right? And she comes out, and there's this guy like painting or cleaning graffiti or something on the wall, and he's like, oh, you got to get out of here, you got to get out of here. And she's like, well, thanks so much for helping me, do you have a baby mama and stuff, and like giving him a hug, and like, oh, you're so great, you're so great. And he's like, get out of here, just go that way.
Right. And I think there's an undercurrent of like nervousness, because he is a person of color too. And he's like, sees this person escaping a bus, and he knows that like the corrections person is going to be back any minute. And of course they're going to look at him as like potentially helping this person to escape. So there's like this really kind of like legitimately scary undercurrent that he has. It's like, I do not want to be caught even having anybody think I have something to do with helping you escape. Would you just leave me alone and get out of here?
And she just keeps coming back too, right? Like, I thought she went that way. Now she's back, and she's just like, And really, there's a sweetness in that scene. And then there's just a scene where when she first goes to the police to ask to see if they can help her with her stolen car. She goes up to this police officer, and she's just like, I've got such a sweet smile, I haven't seen a smile in forever, I've been in jail. And like, he's just like, get away from me.
There's a lot of great stuff like that. And like the scene at the diner in New Jersey later on, where she comes in and starts handing out flyers, like looking for Eric and Lil Ray, and you know, she's like, thanks, when I find them, I'm gonna kill them. And then she takes off, and then they come in, which I don't know how, it must have been like within like a couple of minutes, because it's all the same crowd that is there. But they come in, and everyone starts with, I'm like, oh my god, that's them. And then, so they're warned off, they leave the diner, and then Tiffany Haddish comes back. And the thing that made me laugh is, they're like, there's this one woman there who like is so invested in like helping her track them down.
Yeah.
And the person she's with, she's like, is just like, leave it alone, leave it alone. Like, he's giving her like this cut signal. It's like, no, stop it. It's let them handle their own business.
Yeah. And what's funny with that real person, it just shows you just how funny people are. She's like, go get them, girl. You get them. You get them, and then she leaves, and she shoots a staple gun.
Yeah,
she flinches. She's like, "Oh, she's got a gun. Oh my, you know." And like, she just, you know, She's badass until like until she thinks she's got a gun, and then she's just like, "Oh my god!" And everyone's like, "Cool out! That was a staple gun.
It's a staple gun." That's another one of those things that, you know, in the moment, really, really walks up to the edge of something, given everything that's happened in the United States right now. There is so much that works. The stuff that doesn't work is, I think, very, very small. In so much as, you know, Eric Andre and everybody is like super committed, I think the real stars is like the great reactions they get from people. The car crash later on, that was so brilliantly executed. It was such a brutal looking crash. And again, you're thinking for a minute, like they kind of like wander out of the car, like just like kind of dazed with like some minor cuts and bruises. And you're like, like, really? You're like, you're just gonna, nobody's calling an ambulance or anything? It's the it goes right into this great scene where Chris and Bud have a fight, and like the bystanders are like pulling them off each other, and it's such a delight. I did find like repeated times where I was like just found myself accidentally questioning the logic of things, like Tiffany Haddish steals a police car and drives it up the eastern seaboard.
She rips the door off of it too.
And it's like, don't those things have like locators? Like, aren't the police missing their missing cruiser? But you know, fortunately the logic abates. Like eventually you have these like unexpected moments of logic that try to, you know, tear you away from the narrative, it eventually writes itself and you get right back into all the craziness. And
because there's such a momentum to it, you're like, let's roll. Like, it starts off with the scene and the with the detailing, and he's vacuuming the car and his clothes come off and you're like, and now he's naked, and that happens right away. And then, you know, him in the bathtub and he's running to work. You know, there's a momentum in the opening credits there. And it just, you know, you're just like, okay, on to the next thing. Which is interesting. You might say it might, in a different movie, they would maybe linger more in some scenes, make people more uncomfortable. But for this one, it's almost like you got to get the point across and then get on to the next thing, right? And they probably, you know, they had a lot of footage, but, you know, you think people are going to catch on eventually to some of those scenes pretty quickly, right? Like, you have to get onto the next thing and get that momentum going. And I thought they did a great job with that. And like the story is like really sort of contrived in a way, but it's sweet. You know, it's a very cliche thing, but it's just sweet. And you're just like, you go with it. And it's just, I don't know. It's like its own genre. Just sort of the prank road movie, right?
Yeah, it's the plot is like as general as humanly possible, just so they can get into one sort of thing to the other. And editing makes the difference too. Like this is like 85 minutes long, including the credits. So it's like it's like blissfully tight. And you're right. It does have this momentum to it where I have a feeling they were watching stuff back in the editing room and putting it together, and were kind of taking account like what gags work, and they had a little bit more room to breathe, and what gags didn't work, and maybe they got cut down a bit. You know, I wasn't a big fan of the whole bit where they accidentally take ecstasy because they think they're mints.
I thought that was funny.
I mean, that's like, you know, it's
so obvious, but it's
been done. But yeah, that was what was something I was thinking about the old time. But you know, I do love the gross out gags that, you know, like where he accidentally puts his hand in the blender at the juice shop and it's just like this gusher of blood and everybody runs out screaming. It's like a hell house. Because it's just so unexpected that you would go so gross and so over the top like that. But, you know, that's part of like the great surprise of the movie at times, especially, you know, I know that this is a whole review and people listening to this are not going to be going back and seeing the movie as fresh as I did. But I think watching this without knowing anything about it is like absolutely the best way to watch this. Just because it is so unexpected. Especially when it gets that gross that early with the hand in the blunder keg. It's so unexpectedly delightful at times. And I can forgive like the lazier gags, like the barf and the ecstasy. But I
wonder, you know, it just, maybe it heightens those other gags. I wonder if they these are smart comedians. They've been around the block. They've seen all these films that have done similar things. And just wonder if, you know, like the ecstasy thing, it was so obvious, you know, but then I really like the execution, like once they're in the convenience store or whatever, the grocery store, and they're like really tripping out. I just thought, oh man, this is so funny. And I think maybe they know it's obvious. Like when they're taking the drugs in the car, they're like, oh, what are these? Are these mints? And then they just start popping them and you know what's going to happen, but I don't know. It's just really funny comedians. And I just think they go for it so well. And like that shamelessness, right? Which, you know, people, you think of like Sacha Baron Cohen and the Jackass guys and stuff, just to be in with real people and not just be uncensored like that. Awesome.
And there's like a critical mass too. I am kind of surprised, and maybe this is like on the cutting room floor somewhere, that, you know, somebody didn't recognize Tiffany Haddish, because she's not like super famous, but she's been in enough stuff that she should be recognizable. You know, and that's something about the whole, you know, Borat 2, which is excellent. But I was watching Borat 2 and thinking about how much of that had to be staged, because people like Sacha Baron Cohen is undeniably recognizable now, especially as Borat. How much of the stuff was just so borderline illegal that if it wasn't a movie, like the cops surely would have been called. It's just in Borat 2, I think Sacha Baron had more of a point to get at than the original Borat, which I think they're basically making up as they went along. But the joy of this is that, you know, these are comedians that people may not recognize. I mean, even if you've seen Get Out, it's not like Lil Rel Howard Harry had a big part in that, but
he's quite good in it, but you wouldn't really recognize him as a known star or anything, right?
Right, that's right. I mean, he's not Daniel Kaluuya, I mean, yet, but it's there is a real talent to this, and you could be right about the softer gags, like letting more room for the some of those bigger gags to like really breathe. Having said that, I like this quote I found from Vincent Mancini on Up Rocks, where he said, "I've never seen a film vacillate so wildly between irresistibly watchable and borderline unwatchable." And I do think that really, that line really does justice to this movie. I think that's the most pointed thing you can say about this movie in one sentence.
I guess so. I think so. But I've seen that. I think a lot of prank comedies are a lot more mean spirited too. So
isn't mean spirited, which is I appreciate it too.
Yeah, there's definitely a sweetness. He just wants to see Maria, the love of his childhood, right? And it's pretty, I definitely recommend it. And it's not, you know, going to change the world, obviously, like some other things, especially like Borat 2. They're trying to, you know,
they were trying to say something,
change the world, really. This is like Dumb and Dumber meets Jackass, but it's just like, I don't know, it really sold it for me. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Eric Andre, Tiffany Haddish, Lil Rel Howery do next, because I think they're all just great great actors, great improvisers too, to do this in front of, you know, real people and and still make like a real movie out of it. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I do like what you said. It's not mean-spirited at all. It's and that, I mean, and that's, I was going to say, an easy direction you can go in, you know, just to go out there and say, like, oh, people are stupid, they'll believe anything, and that's not what this is, and there's a real, there is a real heart to it, and that's not easy to do when you're kind of improvising things and doing things on the fly, and, you know, there's a real commitment, I think, from the actors and, you know, from the crew as well. You know, you gotta if you're a camera operator, you gotta stand there and let that camera roll no matter what happens. and you know, it's commitment, and I mean, that's what made Borat work, that's what made Borat 2 work, and that's what makes a Bad Trip work. It's like there's a real commitment, and also recognizing that, you know, people deep down are good people. Like there's a real sense of common humanity and common decency in this. And, you know, even amongst, like, there's an army recruiter in one scene where he just has like this stone poker face trying to deal with, Eric Andre. And, the scene is done. Eric Andre walks away and he just takes out this like vape, and like takes a slow drag off of it. it's just the perfect way to end that scene, but it's such a human touch, and yeah, just everybody in the movie's great, even the regular people. It's not mean, it's just funny, it's just crazy at times, and it'll be interesting to see what comes next from this, or from these folks.
Yeah, it will be, and I know one of the producers, he's from Jackass, co-creator of Jackass, and he did Bad Grandpa. It's easy to get confused, so this is called Bad Trip. So don't look for Bad Grandpa, Dirty Grandpa, Bad Santa, Bad Trip. Good Time by the Safdie Brothers. I think the title could have been better. The title could have been a bit better, but I think it is a bad trip, so there you go. Keep it simple.
Well, I mean, there was only one... Well, there was a bad trip in the movie, but you're right that there had to have been a more SEO-friendly title, shall we say? Anyway, I'm not a movie producer.
That's for our marketing gurus out there.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, that brings us to the end of the review. So, Tim, you can tell people where they can... find you and tell you about their bad trip on the internet.
Yeah, please let me know all about your bad trips. maybe I can offer advice. Flash in the Deadpan on Vimeo is a good place, and I'm doing a little more at the website now, especially during lockdown. Going to be putting more stuff up on the website, so Google Flash in the Deadpan. And if you want to email me or reach out, let me know. Let me know what kind of bad trips you've experienced, and I will help you through them.
And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it, and if you want to listen to it again, you can download it from our website at endcreditsradioshow.com. You can download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And speaking of Spotify, you can get the playlist for almost all the music that you hear on End Credits. Just look up End Credits on CFRU in your Spotify app. Anyway, you can also find us on social media, Facebook at End Credits Radio Show, and on Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back here on CFRU Thursday at 5 p.m. for news and politics on Open Sources Guelph with my partner there, Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I personally am on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to GuelphPolitico.ca for my news and politics site. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back, of course, next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for another edition of End Credits, and we will see you then.